Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I have a wonderful guest today, and for me, this is a great opportunity to sit for a few minutes with one of my favorite friends from Vashon Island, Stephen Silla. I hardly think he needs introduction. He was on the island for so many years. I think 40 plus, am I right, Steve?
43, exactly,
43,
yes.
And he was always a thoughtful, contributing, volunteering, socially aware and awake, a member of this community who contributed so much. And sadly, I have to put that in the past tense because he and his partner Gordon decided to move off island and are now living in Ruston. You moved 2 years ago, is that right?
Three now.
Oh my gosh. Oh no. Yes. Well, we lost a wonderful contributor, but we haven't really lost him because he and Gordon come back all the time. So I'm going to consider him an ongoing Vashonite. And just in case you don't know his background or you haven't read his writings periodically in the Beachcomber or witnessed the amazing exhibit he and Ellen Kreitzman put together in the Vashon Heritage Museum called In and Out, we'll talk about that. Let me give you a little bit of background on Stephen. He's been a freelance writer, communications consultant, facilitator, and futurist. Many years ago, he was a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor and the Minneapolis Star before becoming communications director for the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation. He has been a leading voice in the arena of socially responsible journalism and co-founded Journalism That Matters. When I first met Steve, he was working on a research project on community communications called Good News, Good Deeds, Citizen Effectiveness in the Age of Electronic Democracy, a project that is even more relevant today, even though it's not going on, but oh my gosh. In fact, we need all of your initiatives, Stephen, because more now than ever. But here on the island, Stephen also worked with youth to get their voices in the media and to facilitate youth-adult dialogues. Then, along with Ellen Kreitzman, he put together a groundbreaking exhibit for the Vashon Heritage exhibit, In and Out, Being LGBTQ on Vashon Island, showcasing a number of Islander stories. And I know for me, one of the amazing parts of that exhibit, I mean, the whole thing was amazing. The stories were amazing. The layout was amazing. But anybody who might have harbored the idea that the Heritage Museum was dusty, because it had, you know, and in the old days, it might have been a little bit of dust, you know, with Vashon's old stories. This brought, really, it brought past and present together in a way that was incredibly powerful. And also, I can remember going, I think, to the opening night, and it felt like it wasn't just an exhibit about the past. It was actually creating something. It was creating an awareness of our pride in the gay community and the LGBTQ community on the island. And so I think it actually changed the needle. You know, it moved us a bit.
We had 600 people there.
At that night, I know, it was really crowded. It was really crowded, and people, because it's a small museum for anybody who's not on the island, it's an old house, small museum, and you can kind of go out the side door and a little bit out into the backyard in the museum, and people were having to do that to kind of circulate out just to have enough space for everybody who wanted to be there, because it really was. It was an amazing community celebration. And then another celebration, which Stephen created over a period of years, an enormous dedication. It was the project to bring to the cinema the life of James Broughton, the amazing poet and filmmaker of the what would you say of the 60s? When was his peak years? You know,
You
60s,
know,
70s, the
he started
80s.
making experimental films in 1947.
Oh, wow.
And such an interesting guy because he considered himself primarily a poet, but he's in some circles better known as a filmmaker. He made 23 films, and the last one I think was in 89, but probably his heyday was the 70s.
Yeah. And you called him a, did you call him like a post-beat when
He
he
was
was,
pre-beat. He
oh,
was
he was
pre-beat.
pre-beat. Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was doing, when we interviewed Lawrence Ferlinghetti for the film, he said, "I was just an interloper. James Broughton and others were doing this in the 40s,
Oh my
right
gosh.
after World War II."
Well, he was such a character, and you truly brought him to life. And I know he was also a personal friend of yours, and you were there at his death. So
Yeah, he was a friend and mentor.
it was both an amazing bring to life this larger than life figure that not everybody around here would have known about, but also it felt so much like a, you know, your personal calling, your, you know, you I remember when you first started out, it was like you knew the mountain you'd be climbing. I don't know that you knew how high it was going to be.
I had no idea. I thought it might take 2.5 years, but it took 4.5, and I thought it might cost 250,000, and it cost 450,000 to make.
Yeah, and that was with a lot of contributions, a lot of volunteer effort, and huge amounts of sweat equity and lots of love, you know. So, and that project, I mean, I don't know if the movie is still screening, but it feels like the project lives on. How is Big Joy, which was the name of the movie on James Brown, how's that living today?
Well, we always looked at it as a multimedia project, and there is a vibrant website at bigjoy.org and an amazing oral history. We were able to get a grant from Willoughby Greenwood, who lived on the island for many years and who fell in love with James Broughton, having never met him. But when she heard about this project, she became one of our largest funders. And she gave us a grant to re-edit all of our interviews. When you make a documentary, most of your interviews sit on a shelf and never see the light of day. And you only use 3 to 5 minutes of the interview in your documentary. Well, in our case, those interviews are now re-edited and available on YouTube for free, through Georgia State University's Oral History Project. So you could, for example, Google Lawrence Ferlinghetti Big Joy, and it would take you to that interview.
That's amazing. How did they end up in Georgia?
Franklin Abbott was a poet who I met through James Broughton, and he had a correspondence with James Broughton and a very close connection. So his archive is at Georgia State.
Ah.
And through him, they got interested in Broughton and have taken the archive for the Big Joy Project.
I love that because, you know, I'm sorry to be stereotyping, but I wouldn't imagine Georgia State as being an epicenter of pride history, you know? And then.
Exactly. And they have a vast archive because of Franklin on the Radical Fairies, the Radical Fairy movement, as well as gay poetry.
You take me back a little because, you know, you and I are both the same age. I think I'm turning 75. I think you're around the same age. And it's a time of life when you look back and forward at the same time. You know, you've got to have to actually have three eyes, one on the present, one to really appreciate the past, and one to start envisioning the future, which is true of everybody, but I think it plays a little differently when you're older. So where should we dig in?
Well, let's begin with the future. in 1976, I edited a book called Imagining Your Future with my then partner, Bob Evans. And this book has been sitting on the dusty shelves for all of these years. We actually had a publisher at one point, but it fell through. And so this book was, I was really into futuristics at the time. And
he's flipping through the pages, folks, if you hear pages rustling.
Yeah, so for example, we had essays in here about the future of anthropology, the future, the future of dissent, the future of learning, teaching, de-schooling, literature, language, video, nonverbal communication, politics, law, religion, consciousness, personhood, biomedicine, agriculture, immortality. I'm just reading a few.
That's amazing. Well, but you know, what you're bringing to me right now is realizing that, I mean, when I was teaching at Antioch University, we were thinking about systems and we were thinking about futurism. I mean, I was very in the conversation. I don't hear people talking about visions for the future, except in the, oh my God, what's going to happen kind of way. Has futurism petered out?
Yes and no. I think in the 60s and 70s, when I put this book together, it was much more on people's consciousness. There were books like Future Shock by Alvin Toffler, The Future of the Future by Willis Harmon, I think. There was just a lot more talk. I think there was more vision, actually, in the 60s and 70s than there is now. And I'm not exactly sure why. I think we've lost imagination in some ways. For example, my father had started a project called the Minnesota Experimental City in 1966. And it was, the idea was that every state would have an experimental city, a city of a substantial number of people, like 250,000, which would, the idea that technology was 30 years ahead of society, and why not experiment with the new technology in one place where we can learn what works and what doesn't work. And the Minnesota Experimental City died for various reasons, partly because of the energy crisis of the early 1970s. And the state legislature, there was also a plan that they might use nuclear energy, and that was very controversial. So that project never happened, but the planning for the education system, communication, transportation, Ford Motor Company was designing a carless city that had personalized rapid transit and a fixed guideway to bring your car from the Twin Cities to the experimental city.
Amazing.
You could hook your car to a an underground power source of some sort.
Right.
Anyway, I just don't see that kind of, there have been a few billionaires who've talked about creating new cities in recent months and years, but I don't see that kind of imagination.
Well, it's almost, and I don't know if this is your experience, but you know, that Toffler's Future Shock, I mean, it's like future shock on spades, because I think a lot of us are reeling with how fast it's all happening. I mean, we go within a year and a half from what is AI to people using AI every day for most everything. And we didn't have a moment to stop and think about it. We didn't have a moment to really envision it. It was almost like the wave was taking us before we even grabbed the surfboard, you know? And I wonder if that acceleration is part of what makes it so hard for people to get out ahead of it, to think about what could be. And
maybe. So let's talk about the future of Vashon Island.
Let's talk about the future of, let's try and take it down to, forget the globe. Let's think locally. The other is so hard. But, one of the things that, well, let's talk about the future of Vashon, but I also want to give a shout out to Vashon, because when we think about the future of the world and how fast it's moving, one of the scary parts is, unlike people like your dad, who might have been somewhat conservative, I think he was the publisher of the, was it the Minneapolis Star that he,
Star and Tribune, yes.
Tribune, I mean, but he was a great civic voice. He really cared. He had the sort of, he took the high road, and yet we see people with billions who feel like it just doesn't feel like they have a compassionate bone in them. They're, some
That's
do.
true. My dad retired from the Coles Media Company in 1984, and that same year he became an independent consultant, but he started a center for the study of media ethics and law at the University of Minnesota that he and my mom endowed. And that was so prescient. I can't believe that they had the vision to do that. It's really the only academic center that looks at the intersection of media ethics and media law. But he was a Rockefeller Republican, and you're right, he had the community in mind, and there's that Scandinavian Minnesota spirit where the corporations got together and said, let's give 5% of our free pre-tax profits to the community.
I love it. Yeah, and so where is that spirit now? And then just bringing it around, because in the years that you were on Vashon and on, our demographic has changed. We've had a lot more affluence come into the island, but fortunately, we've also had good affluence in the sense of people who are contributing actively to the community. And that's, they're helping us shape a future. Everybody does. Everybody has a part in that. But I'm kind of glad that, to see money used well. I'm talking today with Stephen Silla, journalist, longtime Vashon resident, and major community contributor. Before a short interruption, Stephen was talking about his first day on Vashon.
So I went to Sound Food for my first day on the island, and I heard some people at the table next to me talking about community organizing in Minneapolis. So I felt like, oh my gosh, these are my people. And then I heard somebody else say, Rainbow, would you go tell Stash to put something in the compost? And it was a hippie paradise.
Yeah. And was it a safe place to be gay?
I was still somewhat in the closet, but yes, it was a safe, relatively a safe place to be gay. I do remember taking a walk with a friend one day. I don't think we were holding hands, but some guy in a truck tried to run us down. I mean, there's always been that dark side of Vashon. But overall, it was a haven for people who were different. There were people squatting all over the island in yurts and forests and in former resorts, like Liza Bula was a former resort, and there were all these cabins still there, and out on the dock, a dance hall, and people were squatting. It was just
How fabulous.
a different place.
Yeah, and when did it start to change? When did you begin to feel that?
Really, not until the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
The 60s lived on through the 70s and into the 80s on Vashon.
Yeah, right. Yeah, 60s are alive here, Yeah, but then, and then how did you experience that change?
People, Californians started coming up, and we had this plan that we made in the just before I got there. I think it was 78. The island was zoned mostly 5 acre to try to keep it rural. That worked in some cases, but in other cases, Californians came, bought 5 acres, chopped down all the trees, and built their French chateau in the woods. And so when you started seeing things like that happen, you just went, oh my gosh, what is this about?
Was there a sadness of letting go of the old Vashon, and did you find something in the new Vashon that also was compelling to you?
It was so gradual. And at the same time, wonderful people were moving onto the island. Things like Vashon Household, the Vashon Park District, when I was moved there, it was part of King County. So things like the Park District, Vashon Household, Voice of Vashon, I mean, these were groundbreaking things in a way. Voice of Vashon was one of the great early community radio projects. So while I could mourn about some aspects of Vashon that seemed not very Vashon, the island's basic core identity remained and probably remains today.
Yeah, it does. There are other elements here too. I know you've been hugely creative since I've known you, and you've, either in the philanthropic, the socially responsible journalism, the documentaries, the writing you've done, and more. What do you think it is about Vashon that spurs or attracts that kind of creativity?
Well, there's something about the nature of the island, the fact that there are so many ecosystems on that island. There are parts of it that feel like New England. There are parts of it that feel like the Midwest where I grew up. There are parts of it that feel like California. You can go around the island and probably shoot a movie that might be set anywhere. And then there's just the craziness, the Portage store. Oh my gosh. You would walk in there and there would be philosophical quotes on the shelves next to the beans. And it was sad to see things like that disappear. When I moved there, there were three post offices, one in Burton, one in Docton, and the main post office, which is still there. And then there was the Portage store, the Docton store, and the Harbor Mercantile in Burton. I lived in Burton for my first 10 years. So I loved, and I had a job in Seattle. I loved being able to get on the bus and have the bus go right into the ferry and go to work. And I would have long days, maybe 7 a.m. meetings, and sometimes wouldn't get home until 11. But I was still in my early 30s and I loved taking a late night beach walk, and it was just an ideal place for me.
I'm talking today with Stephen Silla, journalist, longtime Vashon resident, and major community contributor. Recently, meaning I think in the last year, you wrote an editorial, an op-ed for The Beachcomber, talking about your transition and moving off island to Ruston. And it was both appreciative, but also thoughtful about the ways in which Vashon is becoming difficult or is can be challenging. What can you recap the article you wrote for us?
Yeah, well, Gordon and I, when we were in India in 2019, looked at each other and said, in 5 years, Gordon will be 80 and I will be 75. And our house was sitting on the edge of a cliff. We called it Sound Cliff because it was both a description and a prayer that the cliff would remain sound. The garden had a indentation or an inclination. Gordon had a couple of falls out there and decided that it was not safe for him to continue gardening the way that he had. We lived on a private road with a private water system, Shanahan Waterworks, and a dewatering system to try to siphon water out of the upper layers so the cliff didn't collapse and the road didn't go into the sound. So on that level, we were ready to leave our house, and we looked at possibilities on Vashon and in Seattle. The ferry system was a huge, after COVID happened, the ferry service just collapsed in a way, was no longer reliable. The healthcare system, as we know, has had many challenges and continues. The fact that the VCC, the Vashon Community Care, couldn't make it. The fact that the island, there were more and more super rich people who sort of were contributing to the fact that our teachers couldn't even afford to live there unless they found special opportunities. So the prices, it was always, when I moved there, Vashon was really cheap compared to Seattle. And lots of Boeing people lived there. It was the blue collar island compared to Bainbridge, or brain damage as we sometimes call it on Vashon. Where the telephone executives lived, you didn't have to pay long distance to call Bainbridge, but you did have to, it was a long distance call to call Vashon from Seattle. And I had a party line. There were five other people on my phone line.
Oh,
so when
my
I picked
goodness.
Up,
a party line on Vashon. People probably forget what a telephone was, let alone a party line. Oh my gosh.
Exactly. But those were the main reasons that we decided to leave the island. We looked at Seattle. Seattle's becoming less and less livable and affordable. But Tacoma, we went over one day just to look at Point Ruston and ended up deciding to move to a condo there.
With an amazing view. With an amazing
with
view.
With an amazing view of our beloved Tahoma.
Yeah.
The mountain.
Do you miss the creative heartbeat of the island?
I do. I miss the creativity of the community. You don't see a crazy bike thing you just don't see some of the things that happen on Vashon in Tacoma. But Tacoma has its own fun things,
yeah,
like the Porch Festival, and there are some great things on happening in this. But Tacoma feels to me like Seattle did when I moved to the Puget Sound in 1979.
Right, right. It's changing,
artists
too.
Artists are here, and yeah, it's... When I moved... I lived in Gig Harbor before I moved to Vashon, and Tacoma was kind of the armpit of the Puget Sound. And now I think it's the glistening, emerging city.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. One is you've been talking to the Beachcomber about writing a possible series for them.
Yeah, I'm not so interested in writing it myself, but I love the
or the supporting idea. It. And what is the what's the need that you're seeing? What's the direction for this possible series that you don't want to write, but hope that somebody else will pick up the baton?
Yeah, well, I'm happy to contribute, but I call it Vashon Visions.
Oh.
And the idea is to look at the past, present, and future of Vashon, and to invite people to write stories and visions of the island. The Beachcomber has a policy that they don't pay writers. And we came up with the idea that it wouldn't be the Beachcomber paying, but the Heritage Museum would have a fund to fund Vashon Visions, so that people who wrote a column could get paid a small honorarium, maybe as much as $100.
Sweet.
If they wanted it, you know, not everybody who wrote probably would choose to take that money.
Yes.
But it might encourage young people, BIPOC, people of color, voices that we don't currently get in the Beachcomber. I still subscribe to the Beachcomber, by the way.
And we love our Beachcomber.
I call it a weekly miracle.
Yeah, I mean, you go, girl. Aspen, you know, has all my goodwill behind her, but wish there were two of her, wish there was a bigger staff, wish there was more money, because there's so much that could be said. So give me some articles or ideas I wish somebody would write about, or I wish somebody
Well,
would feature so and so, or what are some
we
ideas?
actually have some articles in the quiver that have been written already. I wrote one about my first impressions of Vashon. I wrote one about six packs, which are water systems that are there are many on Vashon.
Oh, six
They're
households get together and they form their own little water.
We also had a guy who wrote an article about what it's like to move to Vashon today. So that article is still sitting in the Beachcomber quiver. And maybe when the series starts, they would get him, ask him to update it now that he's been on Vashon for 3 or 4 years.
Okay, yeah, got it.
And then I would love to see more youth. I think Liz Shepard did a great job of teaming up with some of the high school journalists and getting some really great both editorial articles and also some news articles from a youth perspective. But I would love to see more of that. I'd love to see some of our homeless people writing columns about what it's like to live on Vashon today without a home as most of us know them.
That would be a great article. Boy, somebody out there, I want you to speak these right now in the hopes that somebody will say, I could do that one, you know? And what, tell me more. So what it's like to be homeless today would be fabulous, you know?
And what we've been talking about, imagine Vashon 10 years from now. What would you like to see the same? What would you like to see different? How might we, Backbone Campaign has done so much to bring creative things to the island, not just their political activism, but they were involved in the credit union coming to the island.
Okay.
Let's change our economic system, experimenting with barter, with new time sharing, education opportunities to link people up, people who know how to do basket weaving with people who want to learn how to do basket weaving. There are all kinds of experiments that have been started, and some of them have thrived and some of them have not. But just to have us thinking about 10 years down the road, what do we want the island to be like, look like? How are we going to have enough water for everybody? How will we have backup if we lose contact with the city? There have been projects of people who've thought about this. The Green Vashon map, for example, if you haven't seen that, it's a great collection of people's visions as well as resources that existed when that was put together.
Right. I think my friend Annie Brule had some hand in that. Yeah.
She had a major
Yeah.
hand in that.
I interviewed a Annie a couple years ago here on the show. I love her. Yeah. And what's your own vision for Vashon or your personal environment right now?
Well, I would like to see more community communication. I would like to see fora in which people can get together and share ideas and visions for the future. The Youth Adult Dialogues did that for 11 years. And we did that after the tragic death of a 17-year-old girl at the hands of her father, who was Vietnamese and worked in the schools. So the whole community felt this. When he, I don't know how she died exactly, but he was upset with his daughter for something, and I think he strangled her to death or something. But anyway, the island was rocked by this, and I had just started to get involved with the Vashon Youth Council at the time, because I was involved with Power of Hope, a youth empowerment through the arts program that was started by my dear friend Charlie Murphy. And I met Eve Susskind and several Vashon youth, including Ty Stendhal, and I don't remember, there were three of them who came to the Power of Hope. And Power of Hope had started a thing called Youth Adult Dialogue. So we went to Whidbey and witnessed one of the Youth Adult Dialogues there. And the format was something like this. The adults would put down on butcher paper their questions for the youth, and the youth would sit in the center of the circle and answer the questions or have a dialogue with themselves with no adult comments or anything. And then we would switch places where the youth would ask questions and the adults would sit in the center of the
Brilliant.
circle. And it really, we got the feedback from a number of families that topics that were formerly taboo, suddenly they could talk about. So think about how the island might facilitate more conversations like that. And there could be forums, there have been in the past forums on the future where people have done community visioning. I can imagine more home sharing on Vashon to make things more affordable. Intergenerational home sharing, where both the young generations and the older generations benefit. A better system of mentoring. We have a good, pretty good system through the schools and artists in the schools and various programs, but I think we could improve our systems for mentoring. Those are a few of my visions.
I love them. I wish you were, could spark a few more of them right here. They're great. When you were talking about the dialogues, one of the things that I think, for me at least, lives in the shadow of Vashon is, although I love that we are progressive, I love that I can speak openly about the causes and the concerns that I have and feel supported in that. There is an underside to it where you get a kind of righteousness. And I remember when Hillary and Bernie were r running against each other, there was a kind of weird divisiveness where people were, I mean, as a Hillary supporter, I felt like I had to stay undercover. And I thought, well, that is really weird because we're Vashon, but are we really giving safe space for all the voices? Or even though I love the progressive voices, are we excluding some voices
Well,
in
Marge
support of
Twisdale has
others?
been writing in the loop. She's been writing about cancel culture on Vashon. And while I may not agree with all of Marge's political views, I think it's really important that she's bringing this up and inviting us to take a look at how we communicate with each other.
Right. And as much as I abhor the MAGA movement, I also don't want to feel like my neighbors have to be undercover, if they share radically different perspectives. I want to be able to love them for the good things, even if I disagree with some of their views. And I don't want anybody to feel like they're not welcome and have to go under, unless they're truly hate mongers, and that's a different
Well,
deal.
yeah, that's true. Hate is not okay, and unfortunately, we have a hater in chief
Yeah.
showing children that this is the way to be, which is absolutely tragic. But the opportunity here is to reinvent the democracy, right? Just like we need to reinvent all of our systems. The medical system is a shambles. Education on Vashon, I think, has been better than most school districts. But everything needs to be reinvented.
Yeah.
So we're not going to be able to do that if we don't learn to listen to each other, find out what we have in common, and figure out, we don't have to do it this way. Maybe the two-party system isn't working. Maybe, certainly, there are just so many things that
Yeah.
we need to be visionary instead of be constantly being at each other's throats over silly things.
Yeah, and to realize that everything has a shadow to it, and that we can say both and to a lot. I mean, not to hate, but to be able to learn from each other. So final piece. We've been talking about past and future on Vashon, a little bit on the world. You're 75 now, is that right?
76.
76, you beat me a little, just barely. And the future looks different at 76 than it did at 56, at least from my perspective. What's in your creative heart right now? What is in your vision?
Boy, that is such a present question for me. I used to thrive on doing six or seven projects at once. And, you know, I would be working with a group called Libraries for the Future, a children's news service called Children's Express, the Good News, Good Deeds Project, AIDS Housing of Washington, where we built the Bailey Boucher House, the first hospice built from the ground for people with AIDS, which is still a very wonderfully functioning hospice, not just for people with AIDS anymore. But I had the energy to do all those things, and now I just don't. And so my challenge is to figure out, I'm still involved in many, many things, and I would like to winnow that down. The Big Joy Project is still going. We've done some retreats and had some special events. The website lives on, as I said, at bigjoy.org. And I'm debating whether or not to republish or to publish this book that I did in 1976. I don't really want to do it, but my idea is that some organization like the World Future Society might have it online so that people could read how people looked at the future during our bicentennial and how we look at it 50 years later, and how might we talk about what worked, what didn't work, and how we see the future now in all these different areas that I mentioned.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So, and then I'm working with this group called Village Co. that is organizing villages in neighborhoods and that uses basically open space technology to get people together to talk about whatever's on their minds, using a format that includes a grounding, an acknowledgement, a host. I started a village in my condo in the Rainier Condominium building. So at the moment we meet quarterly, but it's so great to have an opportunity to communicate. The villages usually go for 90 minutes or less, and they have an opportunity for one-on-one conversations with a prompt. And then most of it is in open space, so anybody can propose a conversation about anything. So I think I'll continue working with Village Co. I even started one in my family, and I've been able to get in touch with children of my cousin's children who are, you know, the new generation. It's just a great way to help people communicate better. But I'm still wrestling with how do I spend my time?
Well, you know, it hardly sounds like to somebody on the outside, it would hardly sound like you were slowing down, although I can hear that some of the really big projects have dropped off, which they had to. I mean, we just don't have that much energy in our tanks, but.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be able to make another documentary, full-length documentary, but yeah. I'd love to produce something, maybe, with younger filmmakers. But I'm still trying to figure it out. But my overall life's purpose, I think, is just to improve human communication.
I get it. You've been doing it for so long. And I hear that theme that, you know, we started with of weaving the past and the future together. I mean, you're if you get your book out, that's an amazing contribution to that. But it feels like you're living it. You know, you're living with the eye to history and experience and what you've lived through, and also not giving up on the power of vision and the ability to create a future that we want, not just get programmed into what's available right now in our small thinking ways. So it feels like you are, and then this whole thing of gathering people together to really form community and talk at this deeper level that people are craving. I feel like you've been doing that for a long time and you're continuing that.
Yeah, I hope so. And you know, there are still some days when I wake up and I don't want to talk to anybody, and much as I love to communicate, just one of the things that I found growing older, there's some days that I want to be and not do.
Yeah, that's so true. And there's some days our bodies say, you know, no can do anyway, you know. And then it's giving ourselves permission to not feel bad about that and to have that time reading or on the sofa or looking out at the mountain without any chatter about everything else, which personally I find really difficult to do. But,
But I have to say the yoga that I learned on Vashon has been a lifeline for me.
Oh, good.
With yoga teachers like Julie James and Deborah King and several others.
Right.
Just really, that's a good way to keep the body going.
Yeah. Well, in closing, Stephen, and I just want to remind people that I've been talking to Stephen Silla, who was a Vashonite for 43 years, no longer in Vashon, but really just a stone's throw from Vashon and still very connected to our community. I was talking to a friend who was saying, you know, why do we wait to acknowledge people for their celebrations of life or memorials, whatever you want to call them? And so at the risk of embarrassing you, I just want to say you have been such a force and such a giver on Vashon to the larger world as well. But here for so many years, I mean, everything that you have given the youth, everything that you've given to encourage community dialogue, your behind the scenes support to the editors of the Beachcomber, your much wider support for the whole field of journalism and journalism that matters, journalism that still has a beating heart, journalism that is not just commercially centered, journalism that cares about creating a more just future. You've been living it for so many years. Your contribution to the LGBTQ community, both through your life, your connection to the fairy networks, your numerous projects, your creation of all the work around the life of James Broughton, and your In and Out exhibit at the museum, just to name a few. And these are only a small piece of what you've done. So you're an exemplar, really, Stephen, of what it is to live a life of real service and care for something bigger than yourself. At the same time, you're always personally growing. You're personally connected. You're not out there and not in here. You live both, and I just super, super appreciate you and your ongoing support, of course, for our beautiful island.
Well, thank you, Sally. And as you know, I'm in awe of your engaging presence columns and your book and your radio show and your art. It's really been fun to know you since 1994 when we went to India together.
Yeah.
And to have had you join the Vashon community.
Yeah. So to be continued, because these projects that you talked about, they are so worthy. And I'll put in a contact number address for you in the show notes for this episode on Voice of Vashon. But I hope that this idea of what do we call it again? The vision for Vashon or what?
Vashon Visions.
Vashon
yeah.
Visions.
Vashon Visions, past, present, and future.
And it's so rich. And it just makes me want to go out and say, who's not being heard? Who has a story that deserves to be represented, and let's bring them out. And can't wait to hear more. So big, big hugs. And thank you for taking a time, an hour out of your day to share with our community.
Thank you. And thank everyone. I do miss Vashon, especially the people and the idea that I can pee anywhere I want.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.